This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
The trial of Karen Reed about to get underway, and there's a lot of new things that are going to be in the sequel trial, things that we didn't hear in the first trial. And one of those big things is going to be a lot of clips from a lot of interviews. You know, the ones that we've been talking about for like the last 6-7 months. Those seemingly lack of empathy interviews, cold, callous responses to people in this case that, you know, probably don't deserve the cold callousness that they're receiving. It's not probably going to play super well for Karen. I know they're not super happy about it, but here to help us break this all down and understand what it means in court, it is Bob Mata, host of the podcast Defense Diaries and defense attorney. So yeah, all those clips, they're going in.
I mean, that was was, you had to know that Brennan was going to be looking to get all those clips in. And yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I don't know how much, if anything, that they prove, but It's not a good look.
It certainly doesn't make her a murderer. And I've said that every time. I mean, because this trial, the first one, really seemed to be based more on personality than anything else, and that being that of Proctor and, you know, possible cover-up and things of that nature. This pulls her right down there, if not even lower, with some of the things that she's publicly said. And the nightmare of it all is none of it needed to happen. This is all her doing. Her own words, I feel, are, I don't know if they're going to sink her into the place of being convicted of murder, but it's certainly not going to help you with a jury that, you know, they're human beings. And if something's going to tip the scale to getting you convicted of murder, half of the things you said might just do that. It doesn't show you murdered him at all. But it just shows you not being, I think, what many people would consider like a decent human being.
Yeah. I mean, it's, and it depends on what she's going to allow in. If she's going to allow in, I think what we're going to end up seeing is a lot of opening the door threats from Judge Cannone to the defense, in that she's going to say, look, all right, if you intend on pointing the finger at these witnesses the way that you did the first trial, I'm going to consider that to be opening the door in terms of getting specifically Reed statements about them in from the interviews. You know what I mean? It's like, excuse me, if she's of the mindset that, look, if you're not pointing the finger at those folks, then I really don't see how Karen talking about them is relevant.
Mm-hmm.
If you make it relevant by talking about them in terms of pointing the finger as third-party culprits, then it becomes relevant.
Yeah.
And then I think that they're going to have to deal with this concept of, because Brennan might be putting these motions in order to kind of push a narrative away from their third party culprit.
Sure.
Where he doesn't necessarily want to have to get into this stuff because it's question. I mean, she's certainly not making any admissions.
No.
But it makes her look bad. You know, so just in terms of lack of empathy, I mean, in Karen's mind, Karen has fully bought into the concept that these folks are the culprits. So, I mean, from her perspective, you can understand why she wanted to speak out on it, why she's not feeling empathy. I mean, if you look at it from her perspective, and she truly believes that something happened to John in that house, which I think at this point she fully does, then, you know, I mean, it kind of is what it is. You know, I mean, she's allowed to have her opinion. It is her life on the line. And if she thinks that they did something in there, who am I to say that they didn't, you know? I mean, that's she's allowed to have her own opinion on things, and it is her life on the line.
Sure.
So, you know, I mean, I could see a world in why she'd be upset and why she wouldn't feel empathetic towards them. If, in fact, that's what she believes, which I think she does. So,
and that's
how it plays out at trial. It's going to be interesting.
That's the interesting part, because she's certainly entitled to her own sets of beliefs and how she thinks things played out there. Yeah, totally. But she's not entitled to her own sets of facts. And that's the problem with a lot of this, because I don't know what Karen believes to be fact, because what she stated as fact has changed dramatically in so many aspects of this case as it continued forward. And those facts always just happen to fit her narrative perfectly. It's never, oh, I was wrong in this, or this memory came back to me. Because look, I mean, if you're blackout drunk, those memories aren't coming back to you. Your brain didn't record them. So they're not coming back to you. Now you can try and piece things together. Your brain will try and insert things into the blanks like Mad Libs that aren't really there because they're not coming from your memory. And you may end up believing them. That's how our brains function. But we're talking not just like small little pieces of, oh yeah, I was at that house. We're talking full narratives, long-term narratives, detailed narratives about what happened the night. I mean, specifically, let's talk about the drop-off, because initially it's, I don't remember dropping him off. Last time I saw him was at the waterfall. Then it goes to, well, I dropped him off. I didn't see him go in. Then it goes to, well, he walked up to the house and he stuck his head in the door. Then it goes to, oh, I watched him walk into the house and I knew he was safe. So then I went home because I was tired. And then I saw him go in the house and I went home because I was really angry at him that he didn't come out and signal me. It's a lot of different stories for the exact same moment in time. And if anyone who's ever had the moment of drinking and kind of like trying to piece pieces back together, that's a lot of changes. That's not just, oh yeah, I was there. This is like full-blown narrative changing to fit your story. I don't know how you argue that in court when it changes that dramatically. And we're going to see all these. We're going to see the shift. And I think that's the damning part to this. It doesn't necessarily point to any sort of mission of him killing him, but it certainly points to various changes in story. And you also do have the comment in there, he didn't look mortally wounded. From Dateline, which seemed to slip in there kind of Freudiantly. That's a lot. That's a lot of weird things that a jury did not hear in round one. How do you think this is all going to play this time?
It depends. It depends on what Canone's going to let in and what she's going to keep out. Now, those prior inconsistent statements, which there are a lot of them, the question becomes for the state or the Commonwealth, how are they getting them in? Because typically you're getting prior inconsistent statements in when she testifies, mm-hmm. if she testifies.
Yeah.
That's when you can impeach her. You know, the old saying is that you can impeach anybody with a ham sandwich. And that is where you would, you know, attempt to nail her to the cross if you're the Commonwealth, by just pointing out all the times that she's changed her story.
Mm-hmm.
Without her getting on the stand, if it's not considered to be a statement against interest,
mm-hmm.
I don't know how they're getting it in. So it is problematic as it is for Karen on in the sense that it doesn't make her look good in terms mm-hmm. of the story changing. I don't know how Hank Brennan's getting it in, because what's not going to happen is he's just not going to be able to play the videos from the interviews mm-hmm. in kind of a summary fashion, say, okay, well, here's the part where Karen said this. Here's the part where Karen said that. I mean, that's not how this thing works.
Could you bring someone in that was in relation to the production of these and go, is this what happened? Is this how,
you know? It's hearsay.
But it's on video.
Yeah, but it's still an out-of-court statement
being
offered for the truth of the matter it asserts. Even if Brennan says, well, it's not, we're not offering it for the truth of the matter that John O'Keefe actually walked into the house.
Okay.
We're offering it to show the fact that she's changed her story four times,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's going to be interesting. But having a producer or mm-hmm. the interviewer come in and try to testify it, that's not going to work. I mean, that's just straight up. That's double hearsay.
Okay.
You know, I mean, so it'll be interesting how they get it in. It's like, I don't know how people think it's going to play out, but
if she's going to,
the real question becomes for me.
Yeah.
Is has this potential for this stuff coming in, and less the inconsistencies, but more just her statements about the other witnesses, wherein, again, if Canone says you've opened the door by introducing these people as third-party culprits, these witnesses, now I'm allowing him to get this stuff in. And that creates a situation where the defense is like, man, Karen, we think you have to testify. You have to get up there and try to mitigate this. Mm-hmm. Then it creates an entirely different scenario, because I think where it stands right now, the defense, and more importantly, Karen Reed, has no intention on getting on that stand.
Yeah.
You know, because if she gets on that stand, all of it comes in.
Yeah.
You know, anything inconsistent that she said is coming in. So and again, that's really a way that Brennan's going to be able to kind of dictate whether or not Karen Reed intends on taking the stand. Mm-hmm. If you have enough that could really harm her in the eyes of the jury, if you're Brennan and you're filing these motions and you know that it exists out there and he's pinpointing all the different parts in all the different interviews that could be really damaging, that is going to push Karen into a position where she's like, well, shit, I'm not getting up there to get hammered. Mm-hmm. You know? So, I mean, it's really interesting, man. But like, in terms of how he's going to get some of it in is yet to be determined. I mean, that's ultimately going to be Canone's call. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, I think that there is going to be an element of opening the door with respect to things that were said about the witnesses in the case, the mm-hmm. McCabes and the Alberts and all those folks. And, you know, whether or not she's going to allow that in will, I think, to be dependent on what the defense does to a certain extent.
It's going to be very fascinating to see how that gets in. I mean, I can see several different ways if this happens or that happens, which, again, it's hard to predict exactly how that all will play out, but we will certainly see.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.